Proper Sport at 6. You won't miss a minute, whether they matter or not.
Fire it, he's going to dummy, he's going to
win! Yes!
Curry's over the line. No, he isn't. He's lost the ball.
It's off.
He's off.
He's gone.
Go on, Johnson.
Go on, Johnson.
This is the home of full match commentary. This is Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire.
So the season might be over, but we're still here. It's Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire every Monday night, 6 until 8 o'clock. What do you want to talk about tonight? We're still looking forward very much to the World Cup. The big breaking news this week, we might all be going to America in a couple of years to watch the New York side. Will they start in League One? We'll be discussing that. And we'll be talking about promotion and relegation. We've got a special guest in the studio tonight, Mark Campbell, owner down at Featherstone Rovers. He knows all about the chase for Super League. We'll get his thoughts on that and more. We want you to get in touch, as always, at RL on RY. I'd like to thank Martin Clawson, who's been tweeting some lovely predictions that Gary Schofield made at the start of the year. We might just have a look at one or two of them, because true to form, absolutely useless Schofield.
Good evening.
No, we'll start anyway. I've got to offer you the right to reply. You didn't take it, so we'll move on. Richard is here as ever. Phil Kaplan's here. And, well, I guess he's got license. It's his magazine, 4020. All leads all over the front of it. I've thrown mine in the bin already, but it is available now at all good bookshops and newsagents, etc. Phil, are you well?
Good, thank you, yes.
Good man. Richard, Scott Griggs has signed a new deal at Wakefield. You must be delighted.
Oh, very excited.
Very good, very good. And Gary's here as well. You go to Australia very soon. Not soon enough, though. You're here next week, apparently, as well, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I'm here next week, yeah. So delighted as well that Phil now is going to be taking us all out. Some lads were supposed to be taking me out next Monday, but unfortunately can't make it. But after the show next Monday, going to be delighted that Phil's taking us all out from there. But I tell you one as well, I'm dressed in shorts and T-shirt. I tell you what, Hurricane Doris, it's not hit Belial yet. It's not hit Belial. I tell you what, it's 21 degrees in Belial. That's why the legend's in shorts and T-shirt.
Oh, dear. Mark Campbell is here, owner of Featherstone. Are you well, Mark?
Yes, very good, thanks.
How do you put up with him more than 2 hours a week like we have to?
Yeah, well, we just nudge him to one side. We juggle him about a bit, to be honest.
Earplugs,
I think, is the answer.
Yeah, that's
that.
It, earplugs. Yeah, this show should be sponsored by him. Get in touch on Twitter, at RL on RY. The breaking news this evening is Liam Patrick has gone from Castleford. He's gone to join Lee Centurions in the Championship. And we'll speak about that as well. We've got a few Twitter polls running as well. We'll discuss those in just a moment. You can get in touch via the Radio Yorkshire Facebook as well. It is Monday night, 2 hours live Rugby League chat here on Radio Yorkshire.
If it's good, we'll tell you. If it's rubbish, we'll tell you. This is Radio Yorkshire, the only place for honest opinions on the greatest game.
Yeah, welcome along. This is Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire. We are here until 8 o'clock this evening. Lots and lots to discuss. The breaking news this afternoon, Scottie Lam Patrick's gone from Cass. What do you make of that?
Yeah, an interesting one, to be honest. I think he's coming as an impact player. And at times, he's done a pretty good job, hasn't he? You know, but obviously, Darryl maybe looking at somewhere else, or the coaching staff maybe look at maybe sort of a different impact player, maybe. He played a little bit too close to ruck at times, so maybe just looking for a little bit wider running. But overall, going to Lee, I tell you what, they're signing some players, Lee, aren't they, to be honest with you? But Lee have got a good signing. Gareth Hawk, he's decided to leave Lee, and a little bit surprised there because he's looking to finish his career in Super League. And well, to be honest with you, me and Matt were speaking about it today, and the clubs, what he's been from there, the big clubs won't touch him. Some of the, you know, the
last link with Widnes, hasn't he?
Again, Widnes again. Would Widnes take him on again? Would Salford take him on again? But let's hope that he does finish up in Super League. But Liam Patrick, did a good job at Cass. But obviously, Darryl's looking for a little bit more quality.
Phil, are you surprised by that one?
Not really. I think Lee have told Sam Hopkins that they're not going to offer him another deal, so I think he's a straight replacement for him. Just the undercurrent at the moment is nobody's 100% sure what is happening with Salford. I know that if you read the tweets of the good doctor, that he's absolutely convinced that this idea of setting the club up in a trust and handing it over is going to be ratified. It has yet to be. If it wasn't for whatever reason, then I think Lee will be on notice that if there was an issue at all with Salford making the line for the start of Super League, that obviously they would be the next team to be invited back up. And I'm not saying that they're recruiting to be in Super League, but they're certainly recruiting to get out of the Championship or be ready for Super League.
Mark, it's going to be tough in the Championship. Good season this year, but it's going to be a bit tougher next year, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. We're always going to be. We always knew this next year coming up will be even harder than this year. We're all about building for next year, and that's what we're on with that. On we're doing now.
It's been a steady rise, I think. We were just talking before we came in. Your ground's improving every time we go. There's something happening. More positive stuff there. On the field, you're consistently getting in that top four now. What is your aim as owner down at Featherstone? What do you want to achieve?
We want to be in Super League. That is the aim, to be in Super League. But, you know, we're not going to go boom and bust. We need to keep building and building, growing the business. As business stacks up with probably a lot of bottom-end Super League clubs. And if we got into Super League, we'd better increase all our revenue streams and the beauties at Featherstone, everything's ours. We own everything, so every penny that's spent at Featherstone's kept by the club.
Do you think you have to go full time to be in Super League? Would that be your aim, to get to full time and then be in a position to go into Super League?
Without a doubt, we'd go full time, definitely.
Would you do that in the Championship to prepare yourself for Super League?
If we were in a position we could do it properly, we estimate you'd need over £1 million. To do it properly. We wouldn't do a Sheffield and do it like they did it. So unless we could do it properly, we wouldn't do it.
It's a big move, isn't it? It is a big move. And where do you see? We talk every week, Mark. Where do we see this game going? What's the picture going to look like? We're hearing now New York might be the next destination where we're going. But there's a lot of fans have been getting in touch with us today saying they're worried about teams like Featherstone, you know, the heartland team. Where's it going?
Can I just come in before Mark, and then, cause I'll just ask Mark a question there. But the big question, what's coming up and cropping up, and I'm not buying into it a little bit, is franchising. Why are we talking about franchising? Because at the end of the day, as I say, for promotion and relegation, it's all about having that ambition. It's not about putting the franchise in place and putting people in the comfort zone, putting clubs in the comfort zone and putting players in the comfort zone. So why this idea again of franchising? I am literally surprised at it. And I say, Matt, from your point of view, if the ambition is to get to Super League, and I say with promotion and relegation, franchising, surely?
Never.
You wouldn't have that whatsoever, would you?
Oh, never. Can't possibly go back to franchising. I think it'd kill the Championship for sure.
The Championship is a lot better now, I think, personally, than it was 3 or 4 years ago. Would you agree with that?
Definitely. Definitely. The standard of rugby, the standard of games is high quality. The coaching is high quality. The stadiums, by and large, high quality. We just need to keep improving it, and that won't happen just overnight. But if we stick with this structure, I believe that Championship clubs will get into Super League.
Well, we covered many championship. You know, same, Matt. We covered plenty of Championship games as well. And in the Championship, if you don't bring your A game every week, you're going to get turned over by, if not by the top team, but even the bottom side, because that's how competitive the Championship is, isn't it?
It is. I mean, we got turned over by Rochdale last year.
Yeah, we were there.
And we nearly got turned over by Oldham away. So if you're not on your A game, you will get turned over. Players know they need to be on it, otherwise they'll get beat.
People talk all the time about Super League. Are they going to expand it, Phil? Is that the way it's going to go, do you feel? Are we going to end up going to 14? There's a lot of talk about the structure, how it's going to look as well.
I think the issue even for clubs like Featherstone is we need a more equal distribution of wealth. And the issue for me in the Championship is that the teams that are either at the bottom or coming up from League One are on about probably a quarter of what the teams at the top have got, which is, again, a quarter of the teams coming down have got. So we've got this real uneven distribution of wealth, and that does affect performance. So it is fair to say you've got to win if you bring your A game, but you can't win consistently if you're one of the lower ranked teams because you haven't got the squad and the quality of player to do it. How are we going to get more money in the sport? Well, probably to bring in teams like New York, to open up new markets, to get new television deals, to get new commercial partners, and that money has to then filter down through the leagues. Otherwise, I don't see how clubs like Featherstone can go full-time. because I genuinely think there is a glass ceiling. It's not the fault of Featherstone. It's the fact that the size of the town, the village that you come from, means that you are limited. The fact that the industry that built the team, supported the team and resourced the team isn't there anymore. So you need more external commercial income coming in. And it may well be that that is an American television deal. So I think that, personally, there are two spheres to the sport at the moment. We talk about this nearly every week. There's the part-time game and the full-time game. You've got to give something in each sphere that is valuable to win. You've also then got to look at any team that wants to go from being part-time to full-time earns the right to be in Super League. So it's not necessarily promotion, relegation that is purely based on the field. It's one of the factors. And that's the thing about franchising and licensing. It's how it's operated, not necessarily how it was operated. Mm. The issue was, I think, we didn't police it. Because nobody ever said at any stage you don't have promotion, relegation when you have licensing. And we also put a 3-year stipulation on a franchise, which was too long. Perhaps it should have been 2 years. But the issue, I think, was exemplified when Featherstone came to Leeds in the quarter-final of the Challenge Cup. And all of a sudden, you were asked to make a decision as to what was more important to you as a club in terms of finance. Was it playing 2 league games and winning them and trying to get £450,000 for finishing third minimum in the Championship? Or was it trying to take a really competitive team to Leeds and win a Challenge Cup tie? And for all the economic reasons, you quite rightly chose the two Championship games as being more important, one of which I think was against London on the weekend, a rival of yours at the time. And we're asking clubs all the time to make an economic decision. And if that is the case, if we are talking about the business of sport, then the one thing we need to do is get more money in at the top level and filter it down.
Mm-hmm. What do you say to that, Mark? I mean,
I'd have to agree with a lot of what Phil says. The game does need more money into it. It does need more sponsorship, more spectators. When I look at our revenues on a sponsorship term in the Championship, we're not that far off Castleford and Wakefield. So we're not far off. I know we're a small town, but you know, there's some big businesses around just on our doorstep. So it's not inconceivable that Featherstone can increase our revenues. If we'd have finished above London this year, we'd have had 700,000. We're fetching a bit more commercial revenue and some more other things what we're working on, and we're at the £1 million where we want to be to go full time.
And is that what you think? If you could generate or have income into your club every year £1 million, you think you'd be happy to put Fev full time, would you?
Yeah, we would.
Wow. Now,
I think the other thing as well is that we spoke about this. The Northern Rail Cup going is makes no commercial sense. That clubs need something that they can genuinely win, and at the moment, you know, Featherstone can get to maybe the quarterfinal of the Challenge Cup. They can get into the eights as currently constituted, but if you are part-time, then there is a limit economically. You can even go in the eights because it's unrealistic to expect you to suddenly play 7 games at an intensity that you've not played and win at least half of them and get promoted. So we need to desperately bring back something that Featherstone can win. And on the basis of that, you can then sell season tickets and appeal to the traditional core of your support because they can see progress. Whereas at the moment, you set out the beginning of the season and trying to make the top four, I don't think is enough. You need something that you can parade around, you know, the local town hall and have events back down at what is one of undoubtedly the best ground, certainly at Championship level, and capitalise on that. I think it's extremely difficult when you've played in the eights and one of the results that you've had is you've lost 68-0 to a Super League team. Now, irrespective of who played well and who didn't in that game, it's very hard if that's your last home game of the season to then put packages on sale. So I think, you know, if you were to have a Northern Rail Cup type competition for teams that aren't full time that ended up at Wembley as a double header, and you could take 10,000-15,000 fans on a fabulous day out, not only does that solve the problem of why Wembley is still empty, but actually you then can sell on the back of that the dream of if we can get to £1 million, we can go full time. And the other thing about having a team like Featherstone ultimately at the top table is it's the Green Bay story. It's the one ever. It's like Castleford have been this year. Nobody is being denied the chance to be there. It's on what economic condition can you survive there? So I think it's vitally important that they have something that they can win.
We've discussed this. You know, they're struggling to sell out Wembley for the cup final. We said, why not have a double header with the old Northern Rail? Would you be up for that, Mark? Oh, wouldn't you, down at Wembley with your club?
I think it'd be a fantastic concept, and Phil's right. Our fans want. We need a final to get to what we could actually win. Because at the moment, there isn't one.
Well, it's getting almost like Arsenal in the football, isn't it? Arsenal thinking, well, we keep making the top four, but the fans do. They want to win. They want cups. They want finals, don't they?
You know, they want day outs, and you know, everybody remembers going to a final, and it's off the back of that the kids get hooked and start being Rugby League fans.
Yeah, good stuff. Plenty of people getting in touch. We'll have a look at that. Rich, what's happening in social media?
First of all, on this expansion thing, Mark says, expansion to the USA and Canada will mean the end of away supporters. Is that what we really want? A one-off trip to such places may have some attraction, but how would families realistically afford to travel to such places every year? Rose-tinted spectacles need to be taken off by the RFL.
But I guess, if New York come in, you're going to have Toronto coming down Post Office Road next season.
I think it's fantastic. I mean, I've heard other chairman owners go on about they don't fetch anything. What do they fetch to the game? No away support. Well, Toronto getting 7,000. What an achievement that is in the first year. You know, there's some of these clubs that are struggling to get 200 people.
Yeah.
And they're getting 7,000 in the first year. And what an experience it is going out and watching your team in Canada.
I think the other thing that's significant.
I don't see how you can have a negative look on it.
If you're wanting to sell to your fans and you want to increase your core fan base from, say, 1,500 to 2,000, there's nothing more exciting than Toronto coming into town. And York experienced it, that if you market it right, you can hit a whole new audience just by who you're playing. And it's not about whether they bring fans over. It gives you the chance to give a... You know, if you were playing New York down at the LD Nutrition Stadium, you could market that for 4 or 5 months before they arrived, build a load of Americana around it, have a, you know, barbecues or however you'd want to do it. But it gives you something different. And there's nothing wrong with playing Dewsbury and Swinton, and that's the core of the business. But if every so often you can throw in something that's really exotic that you can make a party around, you'll get people who perhaps wouldn't normally even come to rugby league games. And that's what allowing these teams to come in is. It's the home support that you can increase and not necessarily worry about whether anybody comes from across the pond.
You seem quite happy about it, Matt.
I'm with Phil. I mean, it's a great opportunity to sell your product to a different audience. New York's coming, Toronto's coming, Toulouse are coming. And off the back of that, if you can hook a few more and get them there for a week after when you're playing Dewsbury's or Batley's, which will be another great game to watch.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Are you worried this year? Because people looking, Hull Care are going out of the division, Bradford are going out the other end. You're losing possibly two big paydays there. Are you worried about that? Is that something you've budgeted for already?
No, because, we have budgeted it, obviously, but it's up to us to increase our crowds. We can't just sit back. We've got Toronto. Look what York did. They've got 2,700 for Toronto coming to York. And if York can do it, with no marketing budget, no full-time staff, well, I'm sure Featherstone can have a good pop at it.
Yeah, there you go. It sadly seems this type of attitude's not at all the other clubs.
Well, I also think that Featherstone showed when they went to Catalan this year, you know, you couldn't have expected before the season started you'd have a trip away. But a lot of your fans really enjoyed the experience, and because they don't get to do it very often. And even though that game was on television, people wanted to go as part of your club to experience what it's like to go to a stadium with 8,000 or 9,000 people in. But the 80 minutes they go for is not the reason they go. They go for the experience, the excitement, the camaraderie, meeting French fans, being a club on tour. It's really exciting when you be, I mean, Gary will experience that when he goes with England to the World Cup, that it's all of this touring mentality. And I would imagine that Featherstone would relish that kind of opportunity rather than see it as maybe Catalan fans wouldn't come back in the opposite direction.
I'll tell you what as well, that's going to be an experience, isn't it, seeing big Dave Taylor coming down the slope down at Featherstone. I'll tell you what, I'm not in the defensive line.
Did you see him last season?
Certainly, certainly. He's got the wind behind as well. I won't want Dave Taylor
assuming
down
they're
that
in
slope
the bottom four four again next year, are you?
I'll tell you what, though. If it's raining, windy and cold, I wouldn't mind seeing him running up the hill. Yeah, we'll see how much ticker he's got then, because you gave him plenty last time we saw him.
Oh, mate, he fully deserved it. That performance at the Kirkham. It was embarrassing, but anyway.
Right, what else is happening in social media, Rich?
Wobbly-headed Bull says, not sure how much the away support argument flies. Realistically, how big are away crowds now, even at Super League level? Well, apart from Hull KR, of course, who take 7 billion people to every game.
Now, Richard.
Terry says, New York are not going to be franchising. They're doing the same as Toronto, starting at the bottom. Well, it sounds like they're starting at the bottom in the Championship rather than League One, doesn't it? Because League One is we don't know what's happening to League One. Something's going to happen, but we don't know what.
I was going to say, I got an email asking me to buy a Bradford Bulls season ticket, and I thought, I don't know who you're playing, I don't know how many games you've got, I don't know who you're playing, why am I going to buy a ticket?
I've got loads of players.
They have.
But also, this New York side then, again...
They need a coach.
We need a coach. They need a football manager like Toronto have done. Where they're going to get all the players from? Are they going to be giving trials to the American players or this sort of thing? Where are the players coming from?
Well, they say, unlike Toronto, they actually are going to be based in America.
Right.
So they're not going to be here half the time and then go up. They're saying they want their players to be based in America.
As has been pointed out, though, by many people, it's all right saying how many Canadians are in the Toronto side, how many Salfordians are in the Salford side?
Yeah.
Fair point.
I'm picking on Salford this week.
I think the biggest issue is, what actually are we trying to build here? And let's not blame the RFL. They're merely fielding applications, but Toronto have opened the door. So on the one hand, we've got Hamilton, Ontario, who want to start in League One in 2019. We've got New York that would like to start in the Championship in 2019. We've got Toronto, who could be in Super League in 2019. What actually are we trying to build here? Because if it is opening up the American market, more than the playing side, but the actual economic side of it, as in getting a television deal, you can't really do it with the three teams playing in different divisions.
So I think,
again, we are making pieces of a jigsaw, but somebody at some point needs to say, what is the picture on the box that we're trying to achieve?
Yeah, I had an interesting tweet. I think it was Dave, wasn't it, who tweeted us in earlier about the format of how it maybe could look in a few years' time. And he was going down the NFL route, where you have two divisions, or conferences as they're called, and I guess everyone in those divisions would play each other twice, and then you play the other teams once. And it'd be split up and you'd go into the playoffs that way. It's a different way of looking at it, but it would mean, A, you'd need more teams. So teams like Featherstone would be invited to the party to go full-time. Maybe need 20 teams or so, full-time teams.
I think you don't even need a number of teams, because the whole idea about that model is it's an open funnel. It's about the number of games you play. So if you've got 16 full-time teams to start with and your plan is in 2 years to have 18 and 2 years after that to have 20, that's open to you to do that and to have the conference structure. It makes playoffs more exciting because you're playing teams that perhaps you haven't seen all year. So the first time that Hull might play Wigan could be in the playoffs. That's a meaningful game. That's going to sell out any stadium. You're then also saying to clubs like Featherstone, here's the criteria to get in. So, A, you need to be full-time. That's the first thing. B, you need to have an infrastructure of people in your club who are employed to manage it. You know, C, you need to have either reserve grade and or academy structure. D, you need to have, a facility that is fit for purpose that ideally would take 10,000 people. You don't have to have 10,000 every home game, but you have to have a modern facility that can. Now, if you're going down that road, then that's fine, because the New Yorks and the Hamiltons and the Featherstones know what they're building towards. At the moment, I just don't feel as though we know what the roadmap is. I also am a little bit sceptical, not of the people who are involved in these bids, but the fact that they're going public whilst the bid is being assessed. I think that's almost like holding a gun to the head of the RFL. So, somebody like Eric Perez, who is very, very good at publicity, will say, we will have a club in League One in 2019. Well, what happens if your bid doesn't measure up? I think that's putting the cart before the horse a little bit. What it needs is some direction, and it might be from the club owners themselves, as to where the sport needs to be by 2021. That's the huge date, because that's when the next television contract will come in. And I think we all know that because the media world is changing in the way that it is, it won't be the same sort of contract that we've got at the moment. It won't be, there's a sludge of money, you go and spend it as you will. There's going to be digital rights, there's going to be hiving off bits to clubs. We'll still have content, but it'll be distributed in a very different way. And to make other broadcasters come on board and be interested in bidding perhaps against the current provider, then we need to know what the sport looks like then, not get to then and try and sell them a vision of what the sport looks like.
Do you worry about the TV deal, Mark? Because it underpins the whole sport, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, fair. I mean, the TV deal is massive, but I mean, that's contractually wild to 2021. Obviously, they're going to look at that just beforehand, ready for the new deal. So no, I don't worry about that too much. It is what it is at the moment. That was the deal we're done, a meeting actually in Featherstone. So that's been set aside for the championship. So I don't worry about that too much. But going back to what Phil was saying about the Canadian teams or New York or whoever they might be, I strongly believe that whoever comes in next, they need to fetch a TV deal with them.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've got to fetch that in, a broadcasting partner, and they're going to build off of that.
Yeah.
I think it's the same in France as well, that so far there hasn't been any money to the sport from filming games in France. So if we're serious about bringing new money in, then what does a French broadcaster need? Well, it might be that by the time we get to 21, we do need two French teams in Super League, because a broadcaster will then see real value in that. They can have a game every week. And on the back of that, they can bring in maybe a French sponsor for the French coverage, in the same way that the great thing about America is there's no shortage of commercial partners. If you get the right television deal, you'll suddenly find that people will want to get involved in your sport.
Yeah.
We also have a great window to play rugby league in America. Now, the NFL season starts, the beginning of October, just as we're finishing, and it ends beginning of February, just as we're starting. We've got a product that is not dissimilar, and a window where I think a broadcaster would find it really interesting to have that week-to-week coverage. But what they need is some home buy-in. So they need to have New York playing Toronto or Boston playing Hamilton as part of the league that they're in. And then when they're not featuring those teams, Wigan against St Helens does become attractive, because it's where do they sit where Toronto are in the league. And that's what we need to be outlining now, I think, as a sport. How do we get to that point? Who's involved in that decision-making? What is the commercial imperative behind it? I think Toronto have done some really good things with the sponsors that they brought in at their level. But we now need somebody, for example, the New York plan is to play at the Red Bull Arena. Well, if that is going to happen, then we should be talking to Red Bull and saying, look, your name is going to be promoted every single week in our top competition. What's the buy-in?
Yeah. Well, they've got plenty of money, Red Bull. Not as much off you now, Rich. You've stopped drinking it, haven't you? But we won't tell them that.
No. Well, I was only drinking the knock-off versions anyway.
What's happening on social media?
Well, it's a mixture of pessimism and not quite pessimism. Oh, by the way, Claire says the legend's a bit quiet tonight, don't we? He'll talk more.
He's gaff, is he? He's got to behave today.
No, well, what it is, it's the show's a little bit intelligent, isn't it? You know, when I fall in that department, I can't get in conversations when it's intelligent.
Well, we'll come back to you in a minute then.
Someone did ask if you've got your budgie smugglers ready for Bondi Beach.
Yeah, we've seen that. Are you going to be strutting your stuff at Scarborough Beach like the England boys?
They looked good out there, didn't they?
Eating salads for months.
I've got the old speedo.
It's not working.
I've got the old speedo.
The salads are inside a burger bun.
As I said before, I'll have the speedos on. I'll be coming out of that Indian Ocean like Daniel Craig. Don't worry about that. I can
tell you
really
what,
show you.
If the elastic
I'll be coming
goes
out there like
speedos,
Daniel Craig. Don't worry about that.
If the elastic
ripped,
goes through in them speedos, someone will be getting wounded.
I've got the speedos ready. I can reassure you.
What a horrible sight. Go on, Rich.
Captain Jibbers says, Toronto to losing in future New York. Clubs in the championship are under pressure to raise their game more, to turn to being at full time, perhaps. Terry says, Toronto has shown that they are good at promoting the game. We are still in the dark ages. Regarding PR, North America can show us how to do it. Joseph, I think, is a Rhinos fan. He says, we've had over 125 years of trying the M62 teams. Either merge...
Joseph.
Let's get New York in. Good away days for the Rhinos. Obviously, all the Leeds Rhinos fans, they can all afford to go to New York every couple of months. That's all right. Now that they're winning again.
Hold on. We've never stopped winning. We've never stopped winning.
2016, the season we're allowed a blip.
We've never stopped winning.
I'm off to the Rhinos Club shop to buy the season review of last year. It'd be great.
Keep looking over the road for the Yorkshire Cup, where you last won in 1992.
What are you picking on him for?
Well, he's always having
anyway,
a
pop. Anyway, your mate Scott Griggs has signed a new deal at Wakefield. Yeah. You'd be pleased for him, won't you?
Yeah, well, why not? Absolutely. Yeah.
Another year, 2 years he's got now.
Yeah, he's had an outstanding season. As we all know, that one little blip. But no, overall, outstanding season. Yeah. Fully deserves a 2 year deal.
Any words of wisdom for Leon Price taking the gig at Workington?
Well, I'll tell you what, Woodfield for sure. Delighted for Leon. And as I say, the Cumbrians will certainly get behind him. And when I've heard Leon speak, certainly when he's been doing his commentary and what have you, and also as well when he's been speaking to different people, he wants to play the game in the right way. You know, he wants to play an open, attractive game of rugby league. And really what the Workington directive says, he's come across very well. He wants to play attractive, open rugby league from there. So hopefully, the point is, will he get the players? Will he get the quality? This is the point I'm going to say.
How hard is that going to be for him?
It's massive. Mark Campbell will tell you, if ever said at that level, you know, when you're looking to play an open attractive game of rugby league, you've got to have quality halfbacks. You've got to have, you know, that creativity in players who can play with his vision and awareness and play what you see. But Leon, he wants a game of playing the right way. If he lets them express himself, who knows? Working to get themselves back in the championship.
How hard is it, though? Because you know, Leon's played at the top level for a lot of years, yeah, as you did. Yeah. How hard is it to go down League One now? Yeah, and the lads will be making mistakes that he won't be used to.
Well, he's not got much air like I haven't got, and you know you can't pull it out forever, can you? But it will get frustrating. As I've said before, and Danny Maguire will find this at Hulkins and Rovers, where he's been at the level. But what he's got to do, he's got to realise he's got to come down at a level. But then the players are going to try and come up to the sort of level what he's asking for. So all Leon will be asking for, the same as Danny, listen, just be consistent, certainly with your attitude in training, your enthusiasm, and if you buy into my ideas pretty quickly, because one thing for sure, when I was at Huddersfield, and I say, when I mentioned it before, when you know the season were mapped out A, B, C and D, when I got the sack after 13 games, I was hoping to be on nearly C. I was still on A because the players were useless, to be honest with you. As I mentioned before, they couldn't get to the level what I was looking for. But Leon, he'll find it frustrating at times, but what he's got to be patient, because he will understand very, very quickly when he takes his first few training sessions. But one thing he's got to do, and I say certainly like when I went to Barrow, was, listen, get the players on side, buy into your ideas very quickly. Advice him will be, get your discipline sorted out quickly. If you're starting training at 6:30, tell all your players they've got to be there for 6:15. And one thing for sure, Leon, keep the players out of the physio room. That physio room's no good for anybody. All they want to do is yap and talk and smile.
What about the injured players?
No, well, injured players, you as a coach find out who's injured. And you know some of them were trying to pull the wool over your eyes, to be honest with you. Get them there 15 minutes early and let them work on whatever they want to work on, the passing, the kicking, and this sort of thing from there. But if he gets the players he wants, plays the right way, I'll tell you what, the Cumbrians will love him.
Big advantage, Rich, that he's got the off-season. He's going in at the start, so he can get things in place, can't he?
Very much so. And it's good to see a former international player not expect to get a job at the top level, as they do in other sports. He's going in at the bottom, almost, at a decent-sized club, of course, in Workington. But, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he goes, and the best of luck to him.
Mark, how hard is it when you're picking a new coach? And why didn't you take the legend offers, you know, when you got rid of John Sharp? We actually had a meeting.
He's just started laughing.
Even an assistant would do.
We were anticipating an offer. We were going to give you 10 grand to take him, but we didn't think you'd take it. So, seriously, how hard is it? Because you put a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of money into that club, and you want it to be the best it can be. I guess it's awful when you've got to make a change, but
you're never sure who you're going to get, do you? There's never an exact science to picking a coach. Some coaches can be brilliant at one club and then go to another club and it just doesn't happen for them. For whatever reason, whether the group of players doesn't suit the coach or whatever, but it's always a bit of a lottery when you're going for a new coach. But if you can get a coach who's willing to work hard and put the time in, and not just the time, but the time on the pitch, you need a coach. I believe you need a coach who spends the time on the pitch with the players.
There's another level as well, and you made a really interesting switch towards the end of last year, which wasn't so much necessarily about coaching ability, because you were in the top four where you thought you might be, but it was a style thing. That you wanted to play a certain way as well. Which is more important, getting the results which enables you to get the money to then build the club, or playing an entertaining brand of football, which means somewhere along the line you might drop a couple of games?
I think the style thing got a bit misinterpreted, really. I think what I was saying was, I didn't feel as though we were getting the best out of the players what we had. I thought as though we could get more out of those players, more out of our resources.
And was that more about you thought you should have been, say, maybe second ahead of London rather than third behind them, even though they were full-time were part-time?
The goal was always top two, because I didn't feel as though Hull cowed as good as what Lee were the year before. And I felt as though London weren't as good. They'd lost a couple of quality players. And I didn't feel though they were up to the standards what they were the year before. Obviously, there were Bradford's problems, Sheffield's problems, Halifax's problems. Toulouse were getting promoted with a thin squad. So I felt as though that were, it were a real opportunity for us to get top two.
And is the difference the fact that Hull KR and before them Lee, when it gets to just before the split, go out and replenish and rejuvenate their squad with quality players because they've got the money to do that? Whereas if you were in that position, you probably wouldn't.
What we suffered the year before was, because it was literally the last kick of the game when we nailed the top four, we couldn't plan for the top four, we couldn't strengthen. What hurt us that year as well was that Leeds, our dual race partner, were in the same competition. So we also lost the dual race players. So we absolutely were down to the bare bones throughout the seven games, which were even harder, made it even harder. So the aim was to finish top two so that we'd have more time to build our squad and add to it, ready for the eights.
Good stuff. Scoy, what do you reckon, Featherstone? Could there be a Super League team in the next 2-3 years?
Well, one thing for sure, as I say, everybody knows that I work for now, work for Mark now, and we have a chat. But one thing for what they have got, the infrastructure, certainly off the field, yeah, they are ready. If they was asked to say take somebody's place off the field, they're ready for it. Do they need a bit more quality? I'm sure Mark would have a bit. And then also, too, I would imagine the new coach, John Duffy, would say, yeah, we would need, I would say, maybe two or three more quality players to add to that squad to make sure that you ever get to the top two from there. And with what I've seen, the last game when I saw Halifax, I mean, the forwards from mine, they really made the inroads from there. As I mentioned, Griffin, he had his best game I've seen it in the Featherstone shirt from there. And I think at times, just maybe the halfbacks need to take a little bit more control. So I think if they could get maybe another quality halfback from there, a quality hooker to put pressure on them guys, because at the end of the day, in the Championship, as we mentioned before, it's all about consistency. And say, if you don't bring your A game, you're going to get turned over. So I think at Featherstone, I think at the top clubs as well, what they require is competition for places to make sure players, you know, they know that if they don't play well, somebody else is knocking on the door to take their place, and they say, because that's where they want to get to Super League.
I think there's something equally important, I think, at Featherstone, which isn't necessarily a money generator, but actually is everything the club is about, and that's the foundation, which is doing some fantastic work in the community. And the feeling as you drive around the town and the outlying areas is that everything that goes on in Featherstone should be at the ground. So if you want to hold a whist drive or a 21st birthday party or a christening or whatever it is, your immediate point of reference should be your ground and your facility. And I think that gets lost a little bit in the fact that constantly examining how a team is going by what it's doing on the field and the money it's spending on players, it actually is more about the role you fulfil in the area that you are. And I would say that the biggest plus, not necessarily as even making the eights, although monetarily that is very important, it's the fact that you now have a facility that is the envy of many, but is the focal point of your community. And the foundation is at the heart of that. And also, every club should have that. Featherstone have that better than most.
But also, what I learned very quickly, certainly in rugby league, when I was at Hull and certainly at Edinley, if you get it around that piece of grass, you know, but also to the, in a certain way that you want to play and entertain. And if you're winning, that brings the people back. And that, yeah, I want to be part of this club. I want to use this facility.
I think there's an ownership thing as well, though. If you do lose on a Sunday, but your passion is still within the club because of everything it does in the community. You know, it goes out and reads in schools or the various. I know you do a lot of stuff with. Programs for either disabled people or and I think that is how you build a club. The success on the field you can never control. It's the bounce of a ball. It's a referee's call. It's a drop pass. But what you are doing is you're consistently putting yourself at the forefront of where you need to be to build loyalty more than anything else.
Yeah, you're right, exactly right. But everything does come off the field. Mm. It makes everything so much easier. Whether it's the foundation, that it's attracting, getting. We have so many kids at our own games playing games, curtain raisers, whatever, and it just creates a great feel about it. Creates a buzz. It makes it vibrant. And when people come to the ground, your first impression counts, and that vibrancy rubs off on everybody. And that's down to the foundation working so hard, but it makes it so much easier when we're winning and playing these big
Absolutely.
Games.
You want them to. Yeah.
To attract
yeah.
all these teams for curtain raisers.
Mm. Good stuff. Keith Treat's coming in at RL yes. on our way. Get in touch on Facebook.
I need to surmise Gavin because he's sending loads of long messages. Okay. He says, the game is getting weaker and weaker as it is. North America is what rugby league needs, not 30 amateur clubs with no ambition of going pro, complaining the RFL isn't helping them. Part-time teams should be looking at the exposure they'll be getting, playing teams like Toronto and New York, and attracting investors off the back of it. Too many clubs are using the RFL aren't helping as excuse. They haven't helped Toronto or New York, but have already shown us what to do to build a sports team. What help do these teams want? Gavin, I bet the answer is money.
Yeah.
Gary says they're getting more money off Sky TV. He says editing that one. The RFL is what the RFL needs to do. We'll talk about broadcasting later, I'm sure. Philip says rugby league is dying. Only 50,000. Frank Keating's tweeted it. The rugby league is dying. Only 50,000 people watch on a regular basis. The RFL need to find out where the missing thousands have gone to, and do something about it. Vinty says Super League is over for Widnes, Wakefield, Lee, and Cat in the next 4 years. New York jumping in with Toronto are just the tip of the iceberg. Uncle Mo's master plan has taken 25 years, but it'll come to pass by 2020. Saints will have to get the name Liverpool into their title. The North Americans will only be interested in big city clubs. Witness Vikings mean nothing to a Yank, but Amsterdam Vikings would, if you get the drift.
It's a fair point.
Not necessarily, because, I mean, we have a lot of people that really enjoy watching the NFL over here. I'm not sure we need to know geographically where Minnesota is. Or Green Bay or you know, New Orleans. I think we've got a rough idea. The fact is we just want to see a great sporting event, and I don't think it does matter if you're called Widnes. We may go along the route of the suffix being more important, and you can imagine the Tigers playing the Wolfpack. You don't necessarily, if you're a neutral, need to know that's Castleford. If you support rugby league, you absolutely would know. But I don't see that as an issue. I think a sport has to have small and big teams for it to be meaningful. But I think they have to play on the same level financial playing field. And at the moment, it isn't level. I don't think you can level too much of that at the RFL either. We need to market the sport. That's incredibly expensive. I suspect, although we haven't got the figures, that Toronto have spent more than the entire budget to market Super League this year. That's how much it's taken. And that's got them 7,000 people, which is fantastic. But they, I think they've spent probably over $1.5 million altogether in not just putting this team together, but getting people to know about this team. Well, I'm not sure anybody, Featherstone or Wigan, is in a position to spend £1.5 million outside of the playing budget just to let people know that they're playing the game. We're in a position whereby the sport is almost held back a little bit by its historical roots that it has no control over. That the North of England industries, pubs, clubs and schools that built this sport are not there anymore. So let's be honest. Some of the people, and we're all guilty of it, that paint this rose-coloured idea of what rugby league should look like. It is still a big minority sport. There are only 30 teams that play full-time professionally. There are less than 1,000 players that earn their living out of playing rugby league. We're not on the same pedestal as a lot of other sports. We do have to build. We've got to the point in the modern economics of sport that there are markets out there that now love us. I think it's fantastic that there are investors in New York that are prepared to say, we will put $10 million into a sport we don't know a lot about. We've never had that before. That's something we should celebrate. It's not an either or. It's just coming up with a structure whereby everybody gets something, that we make the cake a little bit bigger, but the slice that everybody gets, and you might get less of a slice if you're in League One or in the Championship or in Super League, is always a slightly bigger slice. So I don't think we're dying. I just think we're looking at new ways of exploiting what is a fabulous product, which will bring us on to the World Cup at some stage, which looks like being the most exciting and widespread World Cup we've ever had.
Yeah.
That instead of having three nations, we actually are saying, well, we think we know who's going to win it. We've got an idea of who might be in one of the semi-finals, but there could now be six nations that are fighting to get into that. That's exciting.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit more. And I guess the big thing there is if you did get... in America, a TV deal, another $10 million quid all of a sudden into the game, that's going to spread around. It's going to give all the teams a bit more cash, and all of a sudden the horizon changes, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, us at Featherstone might better afford to get Eric Perez as his marketing leader.
You'll have to pay, Matt.
I'm sure he'd leave Toronto and move to Featherstone.
I'll tell you what, Matt, Phil does a good job marketing, I'll tell you. He knows what he's talking about. He knows... what marketing's all about, does Mr. Kaplan.
Are you trying to get rid of him now? He's spent the last three years trying to get rid of you.
He's got to start well
this
next week.
This is like a Dougie Lawton and Gary Schofield relationship.
He's got to stay well next week because he's buying the Chinese.
All right, okay. Okay.
Well, Scully gets all his clothes from Ponty Market.
Yes,
that's a bit harsh, isn't it?
I must admit, these 32s in
the Here we go. Have you got any heavy... getting doing a bit more work, Martin? It could do with losing a bit. We'll see. At RL on RY, lots of people getting in touch. Rich?
Yeah, Gareth's asked, Mark, if you'll miss the opportunity to welcome the likes of the Rhinos to Ferry if the Eights go, or relish a more even competition.
Are you a fan of the Eights or not?
Definitely a fan.
Yeah,
definitely a fan. Yeah, I think it's a great concept. It maybe needs tweaking a little bit, especially for the Super League eights. The middle eights, I think, is exciting. I do believe. I agree with Phil. We need a competition as well for our fans, but we could actually win something. But I'm a definite fan of the eights.
Because a lot of people moan about it, certainly up the league, and they go, oh, we're losing money putting these games on. But I know, speaking to you outside, you were loving the fact that you've got the teams coming down to your ground, and it's all extra money for you, isn't it?
We've had fantastic crowds.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic crowds. We had good crowds this year. We had even better crowds last year. It's been a great experience for us. There's fans going to Catalans. I haven't been to Catalans for years and years. It's been superb.
You say, Mark, you might not have enjoyed the dual reds bit, but he loved it when Leeds were in the middle eights, like me and Rich did.
I suspect, though, you can't budget for that. And the problem is, when you look at the result of that game, I'm not sure it did Featherstone any favours on the field. That it was a great event, there was a real buzz about the town, there was a good crowd, but then you walked away and thought, if that had been a cup tie, Featherstone wouldn't have had to go through that again with other teams from the Super League. I think the more you think about the £1 million game and what it stands for, we have actually got this the wrong way round. And it was something, again, I think that Mark endorsed before we came in. The Championship needs to end with a grand final. And that is a joyous occasion, because the winner of that has the right, perhaps, to be the team that challenges for promotion. What we've got at the moment is a £1 million game where it's almost intruding on private grief. So I think we've gone away from the fact where the Championship grand finals were, depending on who was in it, got anything between 10 and 20,000 people. But what we're getting now is 5 or 6,000 people that are barely able to watch in case their club might get relegated. So instead of celebrating the potential demise of somebody, I think we should be lauding the glory of somebody, and on the basis of that, you then decide what your promotion relegation is. It might be that the Super League play to a point where they have a team that finishes bottom, and the Championship play to a point where they have a team that finishes top. You then have your criteria as regards promotion and relegation. It might not be a straight substitution. It could be that a team, let's say, like Sheffield, win the grand final in the Championship, but say, or Batley, who have no ambition to be in Super League, that say, this is the limit. We want to win this cup. We want to be in a position where we can be promoted. We want to play in a stadium where there's 10 or 15,000 people. We want to go back to our home ground and make money on season tickets on the back of it. But what we don't need to be is in Super League. And it might be that the team at the bottom of Super League could be a Catalan. And the sport may make a decision that says it's actually more important for the sport that that market is maintained. So I think that there is a value in the eights, but only if it's played interdivisionally to get you to a final that would mean something to you. I genuinely don't know at the moment, if you're a part-time team, what the benefit is of playing possibly six full-time teams in the shortest part of the season when your squad is at its most vulnerable. Mm. And I think that if Featherstone knew that game against Halifax, which was worth £50,000, was actually a grand final for the Championship, and it was perhaps played at Huddersfield and it was maybe 15,000 people in, and there was a cash prize attached to it, and there was a trophy attached to it, and that allowed Featherstone or Halifax to challenge the team that had finished the bottom of Super League, which would be Widnes, and there was an evaluation process that was clear and transparent and laid out at the beginning of the season as to what the criteria were for being in Super League, then you've got the option of promotion relegation. It's not a given, but you've also got something we're celebrating and not something that we're dreading.
Mm. Yeah, OK. I think they've got to keep promotion. I know what you're saying about Catalans, but as Nigel Wood said when he came in here, they've had a decade to get it right. If you don't got it right, you don't deserve to be in.
I think it's more about going right back to the very beginning of the programme and talking about where do New York and Hamilton and Toronto fit in. What do we want? Do we want to generate more money? We have to exploit more markets. Now, to do that, I'm not sure. If you're talking about a team in the south of France that normally gets around 9,000 people, where, you know, 400, 500, 600 Featherstone fans would want to go to as part of an experience, that you can afford to lose that. There's something that Brian Noble says in New Edition of 4020, out now, that the game isn't big enough, for example, for potentially a Leeds, potentially a Warrington, or potentially a Catalan to be relegated. The game itself is not strong enough. That if those teams were in the Championship, it wouldn't necessarily just harm those teams. It would harm the sport. And that's what we've got to be aware of.
So going back to the old NFL idea, where you have a set number of teams, not all necessarily in the same division, but playing towards the same goal, you can then have as many teams in it as you
want,
can't you?
All you need to decide is how many fixtures you want to play.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, 25 fixtures, maybe ideally 24, but 25 is what they play in the NRL. Shorten the season, make it more compact, building some international windows, you're seriously then talking about moving the sport forward. We haven't talked about it yet, but the World Club Challenge is in danger of not happening.
Mm.
How can that be?
Well,
you know, because we have such an overloaded fixture list. One of the reasons that the Aussies don't want to play is that Melbourne are providing a core of players for this World Cup that doesn't end until December the 2nd. They don't want to be playing a big game in their pre-season in the middle of February.
Well, but that surely though that can be arranged where they'll play in June then, in the middle of the
season.
That is one of the options.
But if you have an international window in the middle of the season, like we saw when England played Samoa, you could play a club game in that window as well. That World Club could be part of an international window. That's fine. But what we've got at the moment is a horrible halfway house, which means it may not happen.
Do you think that Melbourne, if someone said, right, we'll go to America, we'll play in America, it's £1 million, winner takes all, are you playing or not? They'd be there, wouldn't they?
I think the issue is that they will want to play that game nearer to the start of their season.
Yeah, well, we can understand
the problem
that.
Is our season will be a month old by the time their season starts, and it's an issue we need to look at about the length of the season.
Yeah.
And that if there was a possibility of Melbourne playing Leeds in Melbourne, I think it has to be the last weekend in February. Now, that then creates real problems for Super League. If a team is flying out whilst the season has started, there are issues for who Leeds should have been playing that weekend, because somebody's going to have to compromise that and maybe play a midweek fixture, which isn't fair.
or play a week earlier that they've done before. Did that before, didn't they? When Wigan,
but we need to play less games.
Send them out to Australia like Wigan and Hull. They could play the week before.
But the Wigan and Hull game should be part of the World Club Series, not just friendlies arranged by the clubs.
There you go. There you go. We'll discuss that and more coming up. Plenty to talk about. We'll preview the chances of England. We'll have a look at the World Cup. A lot of players involved from these shores. And I'll tell you what, Scott, it's getting exciting. Now we've seen the teams. There's not just England, New Zealand and Australia in this World Cup anymore.
No, it's not. And as well, I'd say when... when you look at it, and certainly the earlier rounds, you'd say, yeah, maybe there could be a few walkovers, but I tell you what, the quarterfinals could be interesting. And you know what? We're just thinking, if Australia, they play either to Tonga or Samoa, could the Aussies get knocked out in the quarterfinals? Because England and New Zealand aren't going to meet anywhere. Them three aren't going to meet in the quarterfinals. Australia, it looks like, could meet to either one of them sides. Could they get beat by one of them sides that even maybe not make the semis? That would be the big shock, wouldn't it?
That would be a huge shot. We'll discuss that and more. Mark Campbell, the owner of Featherstone Rovers, is with us tonight. If you've got any questions, get them in at RL on RY. You can get in touch via the Radio Yorkshire Facebook page. It's Mark, Rich, Phil and Gary, as always.
Proper Sport at 6. Want your say on all things rugby league? Radio Yorkshire, every Monday, 6 to 8pm. Opinions welcome. But be prepared to fight your corner.
Welcome back to Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire through until 8 o'clock. You want to have your say. Plenty of people are doing that. We are not gone. We're here all throughout the winter. The All Sports Show, Rich, has been axed.
I know, it's a shame.
So the Phil and Scully can keep talking Rugby League.
The one person who enjoyed it is talking about snooker for a week. They're gone.
Yeah, at RL on RY on Twitter. You can get in touch via the Radio Yorkshire Facebook page as well. We're not far away from the World Cup. That is on the horizon. There's been player movements in and out of Super League this week as well. Scott, you're going to the World Cup. You're the one in this room lucky enough to be going.
Working.
What, sorry?
Working.
For who?
No, you lost me there.
Glory days, looking after supporters.
Oh, going to the bar and getting a round of drinks.
Well, that's work. That'll be hard work. It'll be like...
It'll be like being at home with Radio York. We'll send all the Glory Days customers an email and say, actually, if you can get a picture of Garrett at the bar handing over any money, we'll pay for your trip. Please. We'll be safe. We won't be paying for no one.
It's a bit harsh.
No, it's not. It's true. What are you expecting?
A bit harsh, but, well, I've done my column today on the World Cup, and the headline has been, does Wayne Bennett believe in England? And the reason why I say that, because when we watched the Four Nations... last year, we all know Luke Gayle, he played him out of position, played him on the right. We know that Luke Gayle plays on the left, and he didn't have the combination with the halfbacks. He tried Winnup, he tried George Williams. The fullback with Lomax didn't really work, to be honest with you, from there. And then Josh Hodgson, from a point of view where he let him take too much control away. He was playing a hooker, then he put him at loose forward, he took all the direction away from Luke Gayle and the halfbacks from there. So there's a bit of confusion. And then also, as well, I've asked the question, you know, with Hyington, what does he bring? Again, Wayne Bennett doesn't believe that we have any quality back rowers. Well, I'd like to see Matty Ashurst in there, to be honest with you, because I think he offers a lot more than what Hyington will do. And then also, as well, with the halfbacks, just letting them play without vision and awareness, play off the cuff a little bit to, of rugby league, where I want to see my centres and the wingers getting opportunities 50, 60 metres out. I don't want to see him being used as battering rams. You know, when you're seeing McGilvery and Ryan Hall being used... like you know, fourth and five front rowers bringing the ball away from their own try line. So what I want to see from England is a bit of surprise element. I want to see the ball moved a lot more, and I want to see, you know, because at times it's the seriousness. I want to see the players with a smile on their face, and hopefully Mr. Bennett, because as we all know, the record what he's got, yes, he is a coaching guru. The record what he's got as a coach cannot. Be, as I say, thrown out the window, because quite simply, he's been the best. You know, he's up there with the legendary Jack Gibson. So surely now, hopefully, he was part of the New Zealand squad in 2008 that brought something that New Zealand didn't have. And I'm hoping now, Wayne Bennett, as we know with the cock-up what he did with the Four Nations, we know the cock-up what he's done with Dubai. Samoa, did it work? Maybe, just maybe. But I'm hoping here now that he's got something up his sleeve that even surprises the legend.
Did you see that picture of Jermaine McGilvery not going in the sea the other day? So if you want to sort Jermaine McGilvray, just stand on the wing with a bucket of cold water and chuck it at him. He'll go nowhere near the try line.
Why didn't he want to go in the water?
Well, he was like on the edge, looked like he was running away.
Well, do you know what? To be honest with you, when I'm out there in my speedos, I'll be just tipping my toes and, ooh, is it cold?
I think that might have been something that Sam Burgess said about sharks off the coast of Perth.
Oh, dear. Okay, fair enough. How nice, and you can head over to radioyorkshire.co.uk. We've spoken to Jermaine before they set off, and how humble he is at getting picked for England. It makes you realise how special... You're the only one that's had the privilege.
Well, listen, it is, and I say, and a World Cup as well does make it special. And I say there's nothing better place than to go Australian play rugby league, because, as we all know, with coverage what they have, and they all know that the hate is what the English have with the Australians, even with the Ashes cricket now it's started. David Warner saying it's war. Well, that's what it is. That's what it is, but the privilege, what it is, and they'll be getting plenty of stick as well from the Aussie fans from there. But what we need to do, certainly we've got this friendly game, is it on Friday, Phil? Is it Friday?
Yeah, Friday morning.
Let's put a marker down straight away and get that respect straight away. And hopefully that happens, and then get people saying about it and say, I'll tell you what, Mr. Bennett, he might have something up his sleeve.
And you can watch the game for free.
You can.
But you have to go on the official Rugby League website, join our league, register your name. You'll then get sent the details of the link when it comes up. It will be free. I think it's a brilliant idea from the RFL to get members.
Has he named his side yet?
And I think they've learnt from the fact that putting Samoa behind a paywall didn't work. So you become part of an official part of the sport. You give them some of your details, like your email address, so that they can send you offers. And in return, they give you exclusive access to interviews and the matches. So anybody who's listening, join up, go on the RFL website, I think it's /membership. You only need to put in about 3 or 4 of your details, you'll be able to watch the game, and apparently there is something called an app that you can download as well and watch it on that.
Oof, very good. We've got one of them.
I have no idea what that means.
It's brilliant, isn't it, Rich?
Yeah, we're on it. Download it now. Yeah, well, this program's on it. You can listen to it now. Very good. The World Cup is exciting. Apart from for Terry, he's not excited.
What?
Due to conservative team selections, some new blood like Asher, Shaw, Watts or Eden would have made a difference. Stephen, with a PH, is along a similar line. England have got a tough job to win the competition. Some selections for me by Wayne Bennett does not seem right. Bennett not picking Matty Ashurst, Jamie Shaw is a massive mistake. Time for England to get a new coach. We haven't been knocked out in this quarterfinals awfully yet. Mark says he's looking forward to it, but England have a more chance of platting snot than winning it. Dear me, Mark.
Come on.
Mark, of course, the author of the hashtag McDermott out hashtag.
Yes.
Brian says, Wayne's right, we've got the talent. It's just whether they panic under pressure and give away silly penalties. Ah, the Four Nations, they were great, weren't they? Steve's expecting some big upsets or unexpected performances would be required being to get to the semis and certainly past that. Second favourites with the bookmakers. I think they're all upset about the New Zealand shenanigans off the field. Andrew says most of the best world games in the World Cup will be shown only on Premier. Can't wait for Samoa versus Tonga. This is the best thing about the World Cup, all the games you don't usually get to see.
Unless you've got one at that station, you're not going to be able to see them anyway.
And Kev says, does anyone know how ticket sales are going for the World Cup? Do the Aussies care? And he also hopes Nigel would have stormed the BBC to find why they've moved the Aussie game from BBC One to BBC Two. No comment.
Why are all the games not on terrestrial TV that we can all watch for free?
Because we're a big minority sport and it takes up a huge tranche of broadcasting coverage, and we are, we should be extremely grateful that we can see every single game. Yes, you have to pay, but that is the sporting world at the moment.
It's a World Cup.
Yeah, and all of the games involving England will be free to air.
Well, that's Scotland. On delay.
You will be able to watch highlights. Well,
and Wales,
I still think that as a competition and the cost of that competition being staged abroad, we're doing all right. 2021, they've already announced every game will be available via a free-to-air national broadcaster when it's our competition.
It's nice of them, isn't it?
Lovely.
We should kowtow to them.
It's a very long time since we had every World Cup game available live.
But surely we should have the home nations on. Come on.
There will be highlights of the home nations on free to air.
BBC Scotland.
But you will be able to watch every game live.
There's no Premiership Rugby Union club in Yorkshire But Channel 5 don't black out the highlights on a Sunday night to put on a repeat of the vet.
Which
thing.
The RFU pay for.
Mm. We went to the double header at Cardiff 2013. Me and Mr. Campbell and Mr. Ron Hill. I don't think we saw the second game, did we?
No.
Well, you are a bit of a lightweight, aren't you?
I don't think we didn't see the double header.
Who was on
totally
first?
What called?
It was England. It was England. It was England, Australia, and then after it was Italy, Wales.
All right.
Italy, Wales. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And don't ask me what score was, or don't ask me who played, and don't ask Mr. Campbell or Ron Hill as well, because not a chance. But yeah, but this is a World Cup. It's the biggest event that we can offer, and I agree with Tony. It should be every game should be. Live on Terrestrial TV, it is, because when we're talking about this product and we're talking about marketing and getting new sponsors, you know, why is it on? Why is it on Terrestrial Television? You know, get people interested.
That's me. Don't get me ranting again. Remember the recent everyone bought into it Women's Rugby Union World Cup?
Yeah.
Which the final of which England got to, and they switched that game to ITV because it was obviously due to be on ITV4. They switched that game when England got to the final to ITV, proper ITV.
Yeah.
Big ITV.
Yeah.
We've been shoved off BBC One onto BBC Two.
We don't have a big enough international profile.
England,
we have
Australia.
Always
what,
been
and
a
women's
club
rugby
leg.
Union does.
Rugby union as a sport does. Women's element of rugby union is actually one of the increasing parts of their sport. If we get this Women's Super League right, and we do get 8 teams starting in April, and they are of playing of a sufficiently competitive nature, we will get some games televised.
Last week on the BBC website, you could see it said England versus Australia on BBC One on the 26th of October, the opening game of the World Cup. But that has now been moved to BBC Two. And the problem with this is, and people might not realise this, a lot of people just turn the TV on a morning and it's on BBC One and they don't turn it over again. During Wimbledon, which is a national institution, we shouldn't compare ourselves to Wimbledon.
What, even the World Cup? Why not? Yeah.
Because Wimbledon's a national institution. Even though people don't give a toss about tennis throughout the year, they do for 2 weeks. And if Roger Federer is on BBC Two, and on BBC One, it's, Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova, someone no one's ever heard of. If her game finishes, they don't stick on the next random game involving, Kristina Mladenovic. They don't leave her game on. They move Roger Federer from BBC Two to BBC One because the people on BBC One want to watch Roger Federer because they don't turn over because they're thick. If BBC One were showing England versus Australia, it would have a far bigger viewership than it will on BBC Two because people will just be watching BBC One.
So do we not think then the RFL should be saying to the BBC, hey, listen, what are you doing here?
Nigel, yeah. I'm not bashing the BBC. It's their fault. They started this. If they put the game on BBC Two in the first place, there wouldn't be all this hassle. I guarantee you the grand final last weekend was available on Five Live, proper Five Live, and not Five Live Sports Extra. They will have had more listeners this year than they had last year. I hope they didn't. I hope they listened to A, Radio Yorkshire, or B, somewhere else, because they would have got far better commentary. But if they weren't, more people would have listened to the main station, because that's the default for people. Mm. And it's the same with this game coming up in a couple of weeks' time. The default for people will be on BBC One. That's why it should be on BBC One.
Yeah. Mark, if you're short of a prop, if you get Rich down, just mention the BBC, he'll give you a good 10 minutes every week.
He'll sort Dave Taylor coming down the hill. I'll tell you the famous thing.
What gets me is we moan about it's not on BBC One or it's on BBC Two. Why don't we just promote it that it's on BBC Two and do a bloody good job of it?
I think the problem is at 9:30 in the morning, yeah. I think people will find it.
But you saw the rugby league people will find it, but not the general public at large who are just turning their TVs over.
Too many people sit at home at 9:30 in the morning going, it's Tomes under the hammer or nothing.
What time is it on next week anyway? 9:30, is it? I thought it was 6:00 in the morning.
No, I think the Affiliated States game this week's about 10:45.
So in Melbourne, that's in Perth. They'll be kicking off at 8:00.
Hold on. We're not bothered what time it is in Melbourne because we'll be in Leeds, mate, and Featherstone and Wakefield and Bradford. You know, I hope it snows in Melbourne.
Tune in, I'm carrying the flag. Tune in.
Yeah, but there won't be as many people watching you now because you're on BBC Two.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, I'm carrying
my and then when they see you carrying the flag, they'll turn it off.
Then it will be Holmes under the hammer.
Everyone's watching. Record figures.
I'm not having that one. I'm not having that.
And that's recorded 2 years ago.
I thought you were going to say, flog it. Well, flog me.
We'd love to flog you, but we're sadly we're not allowed. Some kind of HR legislation stands in the way. What's happening on social media, Rich?
Marley says, can anyone ring my work on a Friday of the England-Australia game saying there's emergency, I need to rush home?
No problem. Send us your number.
Roy's asked us, who should be the next captain at Hull after Gareth Ellis? Mischievously, he's put with a winking smiley. I think Mark's need.
Ooh, I wonder who's that. Someone
who
that
should be the captain, then?
Let Phil Cabot think now. Come up
Danny Howe.
Yeah.
Somebody who's going to play 80 minutes in the middle of the field.
You couldn't argue with that, could you? You'd say someone like Scott Taylor. Because Gareth Ellis didn't play 80 minutes every week, did he? Someone like Taylor, maybe? Minicello, if he's... Well, he's going to play on another year.
Yeah, no. Minicello. I think, from a forwards point of view, I think... I would be looking at somebody, if I'm honest with you, good communicator at the back there. I'd be looking at maybe somebody like Jamie Shaw, if I'm honest.
I don't know him well enough to know if he's commanding enough at the back to...
I think the way I've seen him, he's got the confidence there. I would be looking at Jamie Shaw and looking at long term, because what age is Shaw? 24, 25, you know, so he's got plenty of time with him. Yeah, I would say Jamie Shaw, if I'm honest.
I'd go with Danny Alton. Great player.
Not a great player. Yeah, great player.
Interesting.
They all have it. Well, nowadays, don't they have about four captains, don't they? Or captain for this, captain for that, captain for this. So,
that's
at times, you just need one voice, and if they need a kick up the backside, then that's what it's going to do. But Jamie Shaw would be mine. Yeah, Danny Alton vice captain, and Jamie Shaw captain.
Right.
Captain Gibber says, can you give Phil a big shout out for his excellent interview on BBC Sport about Rugby League in London?
Hold on. We need to open disciplinary proceedings now. What's this?
What grade is that?
Did you know about this?
No, that's got to be a grade Z, hasn't it?
Huh? It's got to be Y at least, hasn't it? Phil, explain yourself.
So the good people at BBC London took the time
hold
and...
Hold on, hold on. That's enough.
Foreign as well.
No, you're just making it worse for yourself. It's like that bit off The Life of Brian when he's done for blasphemy. It's getting like that. Don't do it again, Phil.
We're talking about the influence of Mr Henderson.
You do know every time you mention that name, it's more courses next week for the Chinese, and it's costing you.
It's a big buffet now, isn't it?
And I say, plus as well, we're going Australia on the Wednesday, so I might be serving a few more sherbets on the Monday night, so it'll be costing you. Don't be shaking your head.
Paul says Liam Watts for captain. Well, he's on the field and not being sent off, obviously. Graham says, great for Leeds United and great reception from the fans. Let the Leeds Rhinos parade the Super League trophy at Ellen Road.
A couple of boos, actually. I wondered if you'd sneaked him.
I wasn't there.
I did hear it though.
Wasn't a booing.
Somebody said that was the highlight of the full 90 minutes.
Oh, given I was at the game, I can assure you it was. Yeah, it was. Let us have a look. I think Mark's asked about Leeds captain.
Yes, who should
be the Rhinos in the room.
Yeah, Mark's asked, should it be Stevie Ward?
Yeah. Yeah.
Legend?
I think. Because of his injury situation, as I mentioned it earlier this season, I'd like to see him go another season, and the next season make him captain. So this year as a standing,
Richie Mile.
I'd like to do me a favour.
That's another course.
Do me a favour, Phil.
That's hot and sour soup.
That's another lager. Never mind the food. That's another lager.
JJB. It's got to be him, hasn't it?
No, I think. Given responsibility, he's taken over the goal kicking duties very well. Give it to Callum Watkins for 12 because then I think you might get more out of Callum. Give it to Callum Watkins.
Okay, fair point. Good one. Anyone else?
Lisa said Ward. Brian said Matt Purcell. Stevens asked Mark what he thinks of Jordan Baldwinson as a player, and do you think he'll do well at Wakefield next season?
Yeah, big ask for him. It's a big step up doing it every week. He's got a great coach, Chris Chester, and Clogger will. Certainly put some time into him, so it'd be interesting to see how Jordan goes. He's a cracking lad, and if anybody deserves it, it's him. I hope he gets his chance, and I'm sure he'll take it if he does.
What's Mr. Clawson been saying about me anyway?
I think he just merely highlighted a couple of your tweets. One by where I think you said it'd be Wakefield Ulquhar in the £1 million game.
I think he's merely pointing out that Wakefield were nowhere near the £1 million game.
I tell you what.
And he said you had Wakefield to finish 11th.
He jumps on a bandwagon, doesn't he, just clogger. He wants to concentrate on getting that kicking tee out a little bit quicker, to be honest. Getting himself a bit fitter as well, to be honest.
That's a bit harsh.
It's true. You say every week when we go down to Wakefield. Hey, how slow is it?
The one abiding memory of the season is when you Clogger and I were sat in the press room at Wakefield.
Wait for his chip boys.
And you, what did you say to him, sort of about people like me?
He said something. I said, Martin, you know people like me. And he nearly choked, didn't he?
He spat his tea. You know, like, he spat his tea out everywhere and just walked out and didn't say another word. It was actually quite funny. Yeah, he knows anyway. He knows. But yeah, we're just merely highlighting that you're a rubbish predictor, that's all.
I beat you this year quite easily. I beat yourself, I beat Mr. Shawright, and I beat
don't
Mr.
Matter.
I don't partake.
No. Sure. Don't matter.
Nigel's asked, do backs make better captains or forwards?
Yeah, they do.
Let's ask a back.
Yeah, they do. Simple as that. Yeah. The Seymour. Of course they do. And the more intelligent. Backs are the pretty boys, the forwards are the donkeys.
You're more intelligent, I dread to think how daft the forward pack played behind.
Let me tell you this, and I guess Mark will agree with this as well when I say this statement. I were very intelligent on the rugby league field. Off the field, it's anyone's guess.
Guilty as
charged. I've got common sense, and that's about it. I am a Bilal lad, I keep telling you. Ding.
While you're on, Scully. Caroline's asked if you can say hi to her husband, Steve Clare. He's working in the Netherlands at the moment.
Hi, Steve. Hope you're well, mate, and enjoying your work. And, is it his birthday or something?
I don't know. Just say no.
Are you missing him, Clare?
A phone's broken. You can't text him or something.
All right. So
I made it up.
There you go.
Could be a rugby league team in Amsterdam or
there is
Rotterdam.
Amsterdam Cobras, Rotterdam Pitbulls. Get involved.
Going to be a Super League.
Why can't I get a job in Amsterdam or something?
I imagine there'd be a lot of Super League clubs that would like to go out to the Netherlands.
You know, P&O Ferries, you think they'd pay to have a team put in Super League? They'd get the money back, wouldn't they, on the old overnight ferry to Amsterdam? Be all right, that's going, wouldn't it?
The only fools and horses to Hull and back. Brilliant.
I remember, two things. One, the letter in the League Express about the petition to get Zach Hardacre out of the Dream Team.
Yes.
Find something better to do with your time. What a waste, what a load of nonsense that is. And B, because Phil's got it on the paper in next to me, but we're talking about the World Cup, and we spoke to a couple of members of the women's team who are going out there in about a month's time. They don't get paid.
No.
They don't get paid. They're having to take time off work.
Yeah.
And they don't get paid a penny.
Well, the lady we spoke to from Thato Heath basically had gambled on... Yeah. She'd saved all the holidays that hoping she was going to get picked, and she did get picked.
I'm not saying they should get paid thousands and thousands of pounds, but that's poor, isn't it?
Yeah, I would agree with
that. Where do they get the backing from, then, the ladies with the league? Who supports them? Who backs them?
Themselves.
There's money from Sport England to develop the women's game, of which part
so
of
So they had to pay for the trip like we did at Barlow and this sort of thing. Have they had to find the funds to
I think
to
the trip is
the
being
trip?
Paid for, but they're not being paid to go on the trip.
Right, OK.
So they're not being expected to find 500 quid for an airfare.
So they'll have to find just the spending money, that sort of thing, then?
Well, but more than that, just take time off work, because they're all employed. So they are using their holiday allowance. But I think the plan is that will change with the start of the Women's Super League, that more people will watch it, more sponsors will come forward, more women will be encouraged to play, and you build it from that base. The likelihood is that in the... Women's World Cup final, it will be Australia against New Zealand, because the core of those two teams are full time, and they're now being attached to NRL sides, which is brilliant, and we need to do the same.
I've got a ladies team.
You're ahead of the game. You're ahead of the game. Got to the final of the grand final
against Bradford. I think we've got five members of the England team going out to Australia.
Oh, is it? All right.
To be honest, they've been the great, the good to watch.
Yeah. Absolutely, we watched a bit after the Rovers game.
Yeah, we
were there. I tell you what,
and uncompromised.
Some of them tackles.
Oh, they get ripped in. Oh yeah, I tell you, when I first did the women's presentation at Keighley in '95, oh boy, did they get ripped in, but the skill level, it was sensational. And then, you know, when I did the presentation, it was just a matter of, come on, Scotty, get yourself in the dressing room with us, I'll have a few drinks. Boy, oh boy, after about an hour and a half.
Are we saying that?
And they were still going nice to the ladies, but no, they take it very seriously. The skill level's brilliant and the commitment, second to none.
Mrs. Schofield knows this tale.
Oh, move on.
She does
move on.
Yeah,
she'll
download it on the podcast.
She don't listen. I bet she's listening tonight. Don't listen.
Judging by the brouhaha then about Owen Farrell's tackling the rugby union yesterday, I'm assuming that some of the women would take down half the men's rugby
band in rugby union. Yeah, tackling, it's not allowed.
Bad times.
Any more for any more?
Yeah, Dean's asked a question about why Super League clubs wouldn't want to go play in Amsterdam, but I think you can probably connect the dots on that one yourself. Yeah.
I don't think the fans can get banned, though, can they?
Not yet. Huh? Butch says, if a Canadian or USA team both made the grand final, would it sell out? Would British fans attend? I think with all these new teams, the RFL are wanting to create a plastic Champions League. I feel really sorry for the original teams in all leagues who have been part of our great game for so long, but are now looked down on.
Irrespective of who comes over from the NFL, does Wembley sell out?
Yeah. Yes. All the time.
If we played a State of Origin game over here, because there is talk that one of the stadia is being rebuilt, so a game will go on the road every 4 years. If it came here in 2022 and it was at Wembley, would it sell out?
Of course it would.
Of course it would. Bonkers.
It doesn't have to be either or. It's just the way of getting new money into the sport.
Even if Wembley didn't want it, if I took it to Old Trafford, it'd easy sell out, wouldn't it? State of Origin game over here. Everybody would go, wouldn't they?
2013 World Cup final. Australia played New Zealand. I think it was a sellout.
Because, as I say, we watch Origin and we're all of us favourite teams. So, hey, when Origin's on, Matt, who do you favour?
Queensland.
I'm a blue.
Queensland.
Maroon.
Rich?
Blues, don't know why.
So there we go, you know what I mean? So if the shirts were all right and whatever, cheap enough, we'd all buy the shirts as well.
Just the chance to see some of the best players in the world domain.
Exactly.
You would go and watch
and rip it into each other.
And if Toronto and New York have made the grand final, it's because they're the two best teams and we'd go and watch it. And there'd be a lot of players playing for those teams that we would know anyway.
Correct, and also as well, 34 Australians knocking the hell out of each other. There's no better sight, is there?
No. Eh? Well, 33 Australians knocking the hell out of you, we'd probably vote for that one.
You asked.
Mom and England and Gene Miles can do it.
Here we go.
Good old man.
Gonna miss you, you know. A bit like I missed that toothache I had the other week. Yeah.
We will see.
Who have Ossett Town got in the...
Well, if they beat Solihull Moors tomorrow at Ingfield, they would play Wickham.
Very good. I think Bradford got Chesterfield, didn't they?
Guiseley versus Accrington.
Okay.
Ossett Town Stadium used to be called the Stade France, after a sponsor you can probably work out yourself. It's not called that anymore, sadly.
Yeah, okay. Good stuff.
Butch says, there's a huge difference between Stade and Origin and Toronto and New York. Explain the poor crowd at Wembley this year. And lots of blue supporters.
We have also offered you a solution to that Wembley issue. We have put this forward before, and I think we mentioned it to Nigel when he came in. Have the cup for the Northern Rail, or whatever it is called, at Wembley, and boy, oh boy, there'll be some. You'll be speaking to your coach saying, we want to be going to Wembley at the start of the season, wouldn't you?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Everybody's players dreaming it, going to Wembley.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'll, you know, and I know there's that, oh, well, they hire it by the hour, pay the money, and get the crowd,
fill the ground, and you're paid for the extra hour.
Exactly.
I think you get back to what it used to be like, where every club went to Wembley with the shirts on.
Yeah.
You get that back, I think you re-engage the championship.
Which, funnily enough, we did have at the grand final. Even though it was Leeds and Castleford, there were a lot of other shirts there because people had bought their tickets in advance to be part of an event. And that's all we want, events. That's why the World Club Challenge is important, because it's the start of the season with an event. Magic in the middle of the season is an event. Wembley and then the grand final at the end of the season are events, and that's what we need to keep putting out there for the neutral fan to buy into.
Yeah. No, I'm fully behind that. I think it'd be great to have four teams.
I think so.
At Wembley.
I think May would be good for the cup final, and then move Magic slightly further into the summer. We are a summer sport. Why wouldn't you move it to when the weather's the best? And
yeah, school holidays potential. Or would they want it then? Because maybe people are. I don't know. It's just worth looking at, isn't it?
One of those events, of course, is the Magic Weekend. We don't know what's happening with the summer bash, according to the League Express today and Mr. Rimmer. So fingers crossed we're going back to Blackpool next year for something. But people have asked us, where is the Magic Weekend going to be held? And we know, but we don't know. We think we know.
Well, Nigel Wood told everyone, didn't he? We just don't know when it's going to be. People who listen to this show...
Middle of May.
Is that when it is?
I don't know who said that.
Quickly, get on TripAdvisor. Go on there now, Trivago, whatever.
Middle of May. We'll have a chat about that after.
Brian says, NRL clubs want to lose-lose with the World Club Challenge. If they beat the UK team, then that would just show how far apart the NRL and Super League are. If the UK team win, it's a case of how could that happen? The Aussie team would get ripped apart by their media. And Lisa says, Australia don't care about the World Club Challenge next year. It's all about the Smith and Thurston show.
It's a fair point. They've agreed they're friendly, but I'm sure if the incentives are right, that the game would go
and
ahead.
One of the things that we need is to do well in this World Cup, because it's very hard to blame the Australian perception of the game over here if it's 1972 since we last won anything.
Yeah.
So when you hear it all the time, the Aussies don't care. Yes, they are incredibly insular. But in the absence of having a test opposition that really actually the public bought into and the players bought into, Origin took its place, whether we like it or not. And the only way to reverse that trend is for us to, minimum, I think, make the final. I think there's a pretty special set of circumstances with Australia this year that if everybody remains fit for the farewell of Cameron Smith, Cooper Cronk, Billy Slater, it's going to be very hard to beat this Australian team. They have got some generational players who are going to be in their last tournament. And you would think that if they steer clear of injury, they will win it.
But also as well...
In the same way that Melbourne won the grand final, they are the best team in the competition. But we need to go one stage further than we did in 2013 and make the final and give them a really good game and then say, right, now in 2021 you come over here because we're going to be even better. Mm. And you're not going to have these generational players and start that way. But I have some sympathy with the way the Australians view us as opposition because we haven't provided enough of an opponent for too long.
Yeah, I agree with that. But also as well, the state of origin, as we know, has taken over International Rugby League in Australia. As Phil has mentioned, because they haven't really had any competition, have they? But because it's lost that impact, what do they go and do? They brought back Mal Meninga. And Mal just said, yeah, I'm going to put the pride and passion into the kangaroo jersey. And that was the first time when he met all the players. He said, listen, your goal is to make sure you want to fight for a kangaroo jersey. I couldn't care less if you're playing for the Maroons or Blues. Your passion and your commitment is putting a kangaroo jersey on. And that's what he's brought back. He's brought that. He loves it.
And really clever. They went to Suva, Fiji, this weekend, played... What he is saying is a potential new concept, and that is three nations playing 40 minutes against each other, which is actually, again, you could watch that, and I watched most of it. It was really good because everybody plays 80 minutes, but you get three different sets of opponents. And he's saying you can take that as a concept to nations like Fiji and the Pacific Islands because nobody ever gets heavily beaten in 40 minutes. So there's a credibility thing attached to it. But the great thing about Mal Meninga was even though he didn't play all his top names because they'd been in the grand final, not only did they all go, but he insisted all the families went as well. So the NRL paid for everyone to have some time, a weekend together in Fiji. And I think that just tells you everything about building this club ethos within the international game. I've now done you a favour. You bought your family. You've had to train hard, those of you that were playing, but the main thing is we've got a bond. Now you need to repay me when the tournament starts. That's brilliant.
But also as well, what the World Cup does as well, from as we know, we've got Wayne Bennett, and Mal Meninga cannot stand Wayne Bennett.
It's another great sub story.
Wayne Bennett doesn't like Mal Meninga anymore. So that is a great story as well. Great story.
I think the other thing about the World Cup, I appreciate what Richard's saying about which channel it should be in over here. As far as we know, 100 nations are taking the World Cup, the television coverage. Now, again, that's important. And I think part of that is the fact that the defection of two major players from Australia and New Zealand to Tonga has suddenly made everybody talk about them. I think the Samoans are stronger than they've ever been, and we've seen that with some of the players that play over here that cannot wait to get over and play for Samoa. I think Ireland have got a really good chance of making the quarterfinals. You look at the fact that their pack now contains people like Louis McCarthy, Scarsbrook, Kyle Amore, Brad Singleton, Anthony Mullally, Michael McAlorum. That's a good pack. That's a pack that will match most in the World Cup. I think Scotland have got some issues because they've had some major pullouts. But we're talking about the fact that we actually don't really know. Italy, you know, James Tedesco, the Rugby League Players Association Player of the Year, is playing for Italy. I think we'll once we get out of the group stages, and some of those games in the group stage are going to be phenomenal. Tonga Samoa, for example, is going to be just ridiculously huge. It's so much to look forward to. I'm not really bothered what channel it's on. I'm just really excited that we've got meaningful international competition at the end of what has been a great end to the domestic season.
I'll tell you what as well, it's going to be a test for England when they play Lebanon. Because Brad Fittler, he's the coach of Lebanon now. And
Robbie Farah.
The way Fittler liked to play, he liked to play with a smile on his face. I reckon Lebanon could be a good test for us. I do.
Mitchell Moses, you talk about a halfback that can direct a team around the park. He's been brilliant this year for Parramatta. Tim Manor up front takes no prisoners. Robbie Farah with that Lebanon shirt on will get all his old passion back. So yeah, it's not a given.
Matt, are you watching the World Cup with a view maybe to picking up a signing for next season?
Yeah, we'll be watching. We've got a few people we know out there. So hopefully we might pick a couple of good players up.
Good stuff, yeah. It's I guess if you can get one, I mean, you know, you've got the likes of Missy Talapapa already at your club, yeah. But get anyone like that, you'd be pretty pleased with that,
yeah,
wouldn't you?
We need some strike in this back line. We've a couple of players out. It was going to be out for quite a while. And unfortunately, they're both centres as well. So we're looking for a centre who could cover a lot on back line with some strike. And there's quite a lot of good players out there. So
there is.
Just depends how much Mr. Longo lets me have.
I reckon if you look at like the American squad, they might have a couple of players that would come relatively cheaply compared to if you were trying to buy somebody who's currently playing in Super League and would just relish the experience.
Well, that's what we're wanting. That's what we're offering. Come over here, dip your toe in, have a good season. And what it might lead to, what it might lead to.
Yeah, you never know. Go on, Rich, what's going on?
Well, first of all, Dennis is listening from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Good man.
I don't know if they've got a team.
Has he put in a bid yet?
Yeah.
For Super League.
Yeah, teaming. The Steelers, Big Ben and all that.
Yeah. While we're talking, Fev, Stevens asked how you think Fev will go in 2018. He says they're my second favourite club after Trinity. Because, of course, there's a lot of, you know, Wakefield and Featherstone. We like each other because, you know, anti-mergers and all that.
I'm hoping for this, and we're hoping for a good season. It's going to be hard, we know that, but we like being underdogs at Featherstone, so I'm looking forward to seeing how we shape up under Duffy. He's already working incredibly hard. He's got lots of stuff lined up for the players. The players seem to be buying into what he wants to do. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can get out of his halfbacks. And yeah, it should be a good season next year. It's going to be an interesting one. Yeah.
Will you go dual reg again?
Yeah, we're going dual reg with Leeds. I've already met with Gary to see potentially what players we may get off Leeds. Outside of that, there are probably 20 to 26 players in their squad. And that obviously has an impact on the players we look for.
Can you have Richie Marner? Can you say Richie Marner every week?
Oh, it's good. Not even worn the shirt yet.
Uh-huh. I've asked Gary if he can swap him for one of ours.
He can have him for me.
Oh. Right, that's the Man of Steel.
That's him in the dream team.
Man of Steel, Phil.
32 tries. Yeah. Man of the match
dream
in the cup final.
Listen, I've told you, he's signed a 3-year deal, a 2-year deal with a year of an option. If he scores 20 tries every season, I will hold my hand up. And I said, you know what, I'll even take Richie Marner out. I'll even take Richie Marner out for a bite to eat, a few
His
beers.
His missus listens to this show, you know.
I hope she does. I hope she does.
That's assuming that he wants to go out for a bite to eat.
That's what motivates.
She's got a Gary Schofield doll. She's just sticking pins in her as we speak.
Well, I hope she does. I hope she does. And as I say, as I'm saying here now, exclusively, you know, if Richie Marner, you know, I want him, you know, to score 20 tries in the three seasons while he's there. And if he does that, I'll take him out and say, Richie, well done.
And off back of that, Gary, I want him to have a fantastic season, because then we might get Jordan Lill every week.
Yeah, you might do. There you go, you see. Always thinking.
Well, I think they've got to be the halfbacks, haven't they? Jordan Lill and Richie Marner for Leeds. Well, you'd like to think so, but anyway, might know something different. Say, Jordan Lill, he might know something different.
I'm trying to paraphrase as Vinti so I don't get accused of bashing them again. But he says, is the poor crowd at Wembley due to the fact that the grand final's on Sky... And Sky's going to heavily promote events they've got coming up on their channel, where the grand final's got to fit in with everything else that the BBC have to promote. Hence, Old Trafford sells out, Wembley doesn't. Don't forget, we know the date for next August. When are we going to bother about selling it out? That is true. We do know when both events are.
I just think
the big issue for the Challenge Cup final is it's on the wrong weekend. It's the most difficult weekend to get to Wembley, especially if you're a neutral. It's a bank holiday. As we saw this year, the trains didn't go to Euston for the Wigan fans.
Yeah,
it's the last weekend before schools go back, so it's really difficult to get kids involved. It's at the wrong time. The other thing as well, going back to the beginning of the conversation with Mark about Featherstone having to make a choice in the quarterfinals this year, is you are 100% guaranteed now that it will be two Super League teams, which again puts off a lot of the neutral fans wearing all the different shirts, which is why you need to make it something different.
Well, as we know from years gone by, you know, everybody who went down to Wembley, let's just say 20, 25 years ago, straight after the weekend, everybody rebooks, didn't they? Didn't matter who was there, because it was the occasion. It was a rugby league event for everybody, and everybody celebrated the Challenge Cup, but unfortunately, that love has gone, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's gone.
Pip says, to make the sport appear vibrant, we have to show the neutral support a full stadium, make them think they are missing out on something amazing. Apart from the grand final, we failed to do this with the Challenge Cup at Wembley and the Magic Weekend, wherever it's held. The thing is, I made this point yesterday, I watch a lot of tennis. There's no one at those events. And tennis gets far more media coverage than we do. We're a big minority sport. We have to fight for our little bit of coverage.
And part of the problem, if you're serious about raising the profile of rugby league, is we are geographically specific. So we're easily brushed aside. Oh, it's only played in the north. If you start getting teams in the Americas, in France, you look at London and perhaps how you regenerate that. And the interest for London is that although at the moment it seems they're going to have less resource next year because their owner is cutting back, and that might be one of the reasons why Andrew Henderson isn't going to be there. London becomes far more important when you have a New York and a Toronto in the league because they want to play the capital city.
Have they named a new coach yet, London?
Not yet.
No.
Any names branded about, do we know?
John Sharp was the name on
if
that
I,
list.
If I was them, and I don't know if he would be interested in the position because I know he's got a relatively young family, but I'd be ringing up Paul Cook straight away.
We'll see. It is a blow, isn't it, them losing?
And you've got to ask why he would go, because the one thing about him was he was building a club, not just a team there, that he was involved in the under-19s, he was involved in making it into a base for all of the teams so they could train together, he was involved in passionately talking up what they were doing there. Now, for him to want to leave, to become an assistant, albeit to a higher division, something major is not happening in London in terms of resource that's going to hold him back this year, and that's a worry. But the other side of that coin is the more you get capital cities from other countries interested in the sport, strategically, London actually becomes more important.
They've lost a couple of good players as well, Mark. It's going to be a tough fact to follow up what they've done.
The big loss for London is going to be Andy Henderson. I think he's a fantastic coach, and every year London, as the season went on, got better and better as the season went on.
Well, we saw them get thumped down at your place about Easter time, where they were awful.
We've done that 2 years running, and then but as the season's gone on, you could see the work what Andy Henderson put into them players, and they were just so well coached. And they've lost two of the good Andy Ackers and Bartel. And we were after Ackers. Quite surprised. I thought he'd gone to Lee. And I think I was surprised as what London was.
I think the other thing about London at the moment is there's a lot of good under-19s coming through. That their team were really credible in the academy division, beat Wigan, beat Leeds, beat a couple of other teams as well. And how do you then harness the young kids coming through that aren't at a level to play in the championship every single week, along with more senior guys coming back? And again, if the game is serious about London, when people like Tony Club's contract expires at Wigan, Louis McArthur's does at St Helens, I'd bring them back, because they're the focal point for the kids that are coming through the academy to see what you can achieve in the sport. So not only does it make London a better team, but actually it gives you someone to aspire to. And those two players in particular do still spend a lot of time down in the south when they've got free time. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility that as their careers come to an end, you suddenly start to bring back the successes, and that regenerates as well. But someone maybe giving a dispensation to London, has to allow that to happen within what is a pretty rigid salary cap. David Hughes has invested over £20 million. And there comes a point, particularly at the age of, I think, 73, where that will start to run out a little bit.
You think maybe Endo as well? Because London wasn't a good place with Endo, and he seemed to enjoy it down there, didn't he, to be honest with you? And he had the backing of you. So do you think maybe Endo's been promised a job after 2 years' price? Doesn't matter if it does good, bad or indifferent.
No.
He's been promised a Warrington job?
I think he's been told what his squad looks like for 2018, and it's not as strong as the squad he had in 2017.
So you reckon maybe take him as far as what he could do?
I think he could have taken them further if he'd been given the resource.
Right.
I don't think it's dissimilar to Tony Smith when he was at Huddersfield, where he took them back into Super League and then said, right, if you want to be really challenging in Super League rather than sustainable in Super League, these are the names of the kind of players that I want and this is what they're going to cost. And at the time, Huddersfield said, we're not ready to go down that road, and he went to Leeds. I think the same sort of thing's happening at London, that Andrew Henderson would have said, if you're really serious about challenging to get back into Super League, you're going to need to spend more, and these are the kind of players. And they've got, well, actually, next year we're probably spending a little bit less, and those are the kind of players.
London's got David Hughes has been fantastic.
Brilliant.
Down there, and you just hope that David's still got the appetite for it.
Or somebody...
So without David,
Or there is an investor like Mr. Argyle at Toronto who would be prepared to put resource into London because he can see in 4 or 5 years' time where London could be. And maybe we, whoever we is, whether it's the RFL or the London club themselves, should be trying to find an investor who can replace David and take it on to the next level.
We'll see. More happening on social media.
Mark says, cup may be too much expense for working class families. Tickets are good, but train fares and accommodation cost a bit more, which is true if you're staying over in London.
It's not a cheap day.
Especially on a bank holiday week.
Claire says, move the Challenge Cup back to May. Pip's making a point about promoting the game. I guess do the RFL have enough money to do everything they want to do? And I guess the answer is no, but how can they get that money? It's a catch-22 thing, isn't it? You want to market to promote, but you haven't got the money because you haven't got the sponsors.
Well, they could sell Red Hall and do it that way.
Well, someone's asked earlier, are they going to move to Bradford? Because obviously they've got a purpose-built, iconic building in Bradford, more iconic than every single rugby league ground in the world. Who was it? Robert saying, are the RFL moving to Bradford?
Is that not something that came out of the Bulls Forum last week?
I think the plan is that as part of the World Cup bid for 2021, there is about £15 million allocated for a rugby league centre of excellence, which would involve moving out of Red Hall and building something somewhere that the smart money says could be the Richard Dunn Sports Centre, as was, opposite Oddsall rather than at Oddsall itself, and moving the corporate side of the game and the performance side to a fresh site where all the facilities are in one place, and don't rule out the fact that that's where it might be.
Bradford Bulls in League One, Mark. It's where they deserve to be, isn't it?
Well, they deserve to be there. It's a shameful game. I mean, you want your Bradford Bulls in Super League as a fan, as a supporter of that game, but they are where they deserve to be. Unfortunately, we've mismanaged over a number of years, and they've got to build from bottom. It's as simple as that.
It's going to cut. They've come out with, I mean, again, following the news coming out last week, they've made a lot of signings. They've got an academy team. They've got the rent to pay at Oddsall. They're on limited funding. Someone's going to have to put a lot of money in there, aren't they?
Yeah, I found it strange with them last year. I mean, why would you pay a £5,000 player a £25,000 full-time deal? You're not going to make him into a £30,000 player. He's a £5,000 player. So why didn't they cut the cloth last year? Have a part-time good team and stay in the division. I couldn't see the sense in it whatsoever. And you look at it again, and they're going to spend a load of money on another, keeping a full-time team again. But what's the point? You just want to get out of that division as quick as you can.
Yeah.
And I just feel as though they're handcuffing themselves again.
Yeah, well, you look at it, rent, Jeff Toovey, well, I mean, I find it laughable, he's coming back to give his decision. He's coming back because he's got a contract. If he ain't got another job to go to, he's not going to say, nah, what bother, lads, I'll come and collect the money, boys.
You know, might end up at London.
Might do. That might be the best bit of business Bradford do if they could do that, but what do you reckon?
So has he gone back to Australia, has he?
He's on holidays. He's due to come back in November.
Is he?
Seems a strange one that he's going to come all the way back here to tell somebody what he's doing.
Well, exactly. He's coming back unless he's got another job, isn't he? Well, all right then. So we say what? They get $75,000 of funding, $60,000 rent on Odsell. Jeff Toovey's wage, you're going to be $50,000 down before you've even paid a player.
I think if you look at who they're signing...
business class.
And on the length of contract they're signing, somebody must be putting up to £400,000 in at Bradford. Be interested to know who that is.
Yeah, exactly. Who is it?
Yeah.
Who is it? Why would you put £400,000 into Bradford?
I think the other thing that's interesting as well, and I don't know if there is anybody, but they blamed their relegation partly on this court case of players who were suing the club. Now, whether we believe that or not, how many of those players have they recontracted for next year?
I don't know. Yeah, but now they're on about settling up the claim, aren't they? Even though they say it's not to do with them.
Well, where's the money coming from there, then? How many is it? It's about 52 people suing him or something?
I think it's just under... I think it's 47, isn't it, I think?
But it's just a load of rubbish, isn't it? It is.
It's just a millstone round the neck, isn't it?
Since that auction at Alto, it was about 4 or 5 years ago now, was it?
You know, a bit more, I think.
When they tried raising that £450,000, all it's been from the Bradford Bulls, it's simple. Lies, lies, and more lies.
And the mistake going back to that auction was that money raised should have been put in a separate account.
Correct, yeah.
May as well have set it on fire.
Because the minute it went into the account that was already under stress and duress, it was only going into a bigger black hole.
Of course it was.
But absolutely. If you'd have kept it somewhere to the side of that, maybe set up a board of trustees to allocate how that money was going to be spent, which would have included perhaps the people that donated their memorabilia, because obviously they had a vested interest in, and some fans maybe, but have an independent and transparent board that said this money can only be used for X. It can't be paying off directors' loans. It can't be going into paying off the HMRC. We've raised money purely to keep the club going. If we're going to raise money for the club to merely exist for another 3 months, there really is no point.
I'll tell you what as well. Do you know, do you know if that was asked now? You know, that was asked. And what was it raising about 10 days? Raised about 10 days. If they ask that same scenario now, do you reckon they get the same response?
No.
Not a chance.
No chance.
Not a chance. Because, as I say, it's been lies after lies after lies and excuse after
great
excuse
F,
after
desk
excuse.
Banging. I thought we'd got that out of your game.
You know, it's just total management and, the directors who have caused all this, and even now these people who are involved.
It's interesting there.
It's just a joke.
Again, it came out last week. Mr. Chalmers accredited saying franchising's coming back. That's
apparently in 2021, which is a date that nobody is talking about.
Well, how come he's been allowed to say this? This Chalmers fella.
Don't know.
What has he been to the game?
Well, I don't know.
He saved the Bradford Bulls, the iconic Bradford Bulls.
Do
what
me
more
a
do you
favour.
Want?
Please. Hey, people. He hasn't saved Bradford. He tried selling it 4 weeks ago until he got found out, didn't he? Hey, give us £750,000 for it. Do me a favour. You won't pay £7.50.
People say we're talking too much about Bradford Bulls. Makes a change from talking too much about Leeds.
Yeah, it does.
So, all our listeners.
We've only been on about Bradford Bulls for about 3 minutes.
I know, it's too much.
That's too long. Let's move on.
The listeners are doing their own jokes in the comments. Bob says, has Scoy been in the gym? John says, yeah, he's been on the vending machine.
Bit harsh.
Your comments on putting that to work.
Do you know what? I'm glad it's my last show for 6 weeks.
Have you seen
what somebody's put on Twitter there?
What show is that? Anyway?
I don't know. It's one of those generic things the BBC put out on the
Angela Rippon, Gloria Unniford, and the legend.
Selena Scott, isn't it, the other one?
Oh, is it? Well, it's the legend,
I'm
look.
Well, yeah,
so Scott obviously watches this. This is the worry.
One thing I never do is dress in women's clothes like a reassure. Do me a favour, eh?
If you can prove otherwise.
Yeah. Don't send in the pictures. No, don't.
Yorkshire Process, they could have the War of the Roses as a double header with the State of Origin if it came across.
I don't think you'd need to.
No,
would you?
It'd sell out anyway. Yeah, it'd sell out within minutes.
A Legends War of the Roses, that would work.
It's worked once, but it'll work again. Brian says we should look after the grassroots of the first division of the Championship. Well, the RFL should. Lewis asked his question hours ago and I forgot to get to it, and it's late. But does relegation really mean clubs are forced to lose players to balance the books? Lee seems to be doing okay with new signings.
Is it a cop-out? isn't it? The contract's become null and void, and it seems to me it's a licence for an owner to say, well, we'll get rid of him, I don't want to pay him, we'll get rid of him.
Might need to renegotiate with him.
Yeah. What do you think, Mark? It's a
bit... Well, they've just got an extra £500,000... extra £500,000 parachute payment, so they may be using that to spend on some new players.
So they're getting a parachute payment, are they?
Yeah.
Is that... Right, OK. That's
and as
very
as,
nice.
As an opponent of theirs next year, should Salford make the starting line, is that something that's wrong with the Championship? That you would be bidding for some of the players, presumably, that Lee are now signing, but with their extra £500,000, that takes them out of your region.
No, I don't think we'd be bidding on the same players. I do believe that all comes down should get a parachute payment. I also believe that if a team gets promoted from the Championship, they should get, maybe as long as they have the certain criteria, that if they're spending the full cap, they get a year's grace, if you like, to stabilise. But you know, Derek's put plenty of money in, and it'll keep Lee going. £500,000 will go a long way.
You're very fair. I mean, you know, £500,000's a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it is a lot of money, but you know, they have come down from Super League. They've had it. You know, Derek put his money where his mouth was, got him in there, and you don't want to see a club go under. And you've got to keep people like Derek involved in the game, just like, you know, your David Hughes and your Marwan Kulkash.
Very good. I think you've dispelled a lot of myths everyone has about teams, just saying, oh, want help. You're very proactive. I think that's fair to say that. No, your team...
I'll be getting pillared now, Featherstone fans.
I mean, Phil, it does, doesn't it? We get people, should be helping, the RFL should be helping clubs like Featherstone and Dewsbury. But well, you actually say, if we're going to get there, we'll get there under his own steam.
Do a lot for the game.
Yeah.
They do a lot for the game, they do a lot for the clubs. They get pillared for most of it, but it's a fantastic organisation. They do it. People haven't a clue what actually goes off.
Fair dues.
And the issue is they have a certain amount of income. So their pie is of a certain size, yeah, and it can only be split a certain number of ways. The issue is, do we do enough to get more income?
Yeah.
Well, send a DVD of the semi-finals, the highlights of those, to some potential sponsors, and the game sells itself.
Yeah. And I mean, the spectacle of the grand final was superb. They put on a fantastic event.
And it sold out.
Sold out again.
Excellent. Good stuff. We are pretty much done. So, Legend, are you here next week?
I'm here next week.
You're here?
Yes, I'm here. Yes.
Yeah. You promise that's the last one?
Oh, for 6 weeks. Yeah. Unless you're telling me different. Unless you're telling me all different.
No.
You're looking forward to the Chinese, though.
Are you going to send in your diary pieces from abroad
so we can play them out on Monday night? I'll be doing a diary.
Free at the pub, had 3 pints, fell asleep, woke up.
Missed the game.
Woke up with a kebab all over my face. That's generally how it goes, isn't it?
Listen, I'm
sorry,
working.
We've run out of time now.
I'm working, I'm an ambassador for Glory Days, and I'm working.
I hope you do more work for Mark Campbell during the week than you'll be doing in
Wayne
Australia.
Met Wayne Bennett told him was the best coach in the world.
Yeah,
his selections were spot on.
Yeah. Mark, thanks for your time. We do appreciate it. Best of luck to Featherstone next season. We'll be down there, I'm sure, covering plenty of games. Rich, as always, thanks to you. Thanks to Phil. Thanks to Gary. You can download the podcast. Nearly 140,000 people have done that this season. We thank each and every one of you who's taken the time. Thanks for everyone that's got in touch as well. Your humour is appreciated. Keep the Scoey abuse coming in. He's back next week, as are we, 6 o'clock Monday night. We'll see you there.